From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is the Joe Hoff Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Oh my goodness. It's going to be just a terrific Tuesday, that's for sure. Thanks for listening in. This is the Joe Hoff Show. That's our new dropping a bomb little music icon. So thank you so much for our producer, Alex, for putting that together. That is fantastic. If you've listened to the show in the past, you've heard me every once in a while, I'll do something like this. That's usually because I was dropping a bomb. There's going to be something big that we're going to talk about. And we've got a lot to talk about today. Today we've got a great show. We got a good friend back here at about 10 past, Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus, who was with us yesterday. We learned a lot about him and his thoughts. It was really interesting yesterday. So thank you, Adam, for joining us and for being part of our Memorial Day team here at TNTRadio.live. And at 20 past, we're going to bring in one of our guests that's been on the show a number of times, maybe as much as almost anybody, Larry Johnson. We're going to talk about Ukraine, and that should be a heck of a discussion with all that's been going on there over the last really few weeks since we've had Larry on. So that'll be excellent. And there's just all sorts going on. One piece of information that I actually put up at my website, joehoff.com, and it's about this study that was released just recently by the Cleveland Clinic, which is a massive hospital company in the U.S., number of hospitals, maybe the second largest in the world, is what one person said to me. Huge entity. Number of hospitals, and if you measure by beds, it's just huge. Big hospitals across the U.S. This entity did a study on COVID, and the results just came out. I saw this tweet. It was released actually yesterday, talking about the results of this study on the COVID vaccines. And listen to this. The Cleveland Clinic study, it found that the higher the number of vaccines previously received, the higher the risk of contracting COVID. I'll repeat, the higher the number of times that you took the vaccine, the higher your risk of contracting COVID. So these people that continue to take these vaccines over and over put themselves at greater risk each time they did of catching COVID. This is a nightmare. And we knew it. We've known it for a long time. These vaccines didn't work. And as a matter of fact, if you give them to children, they're at higher risk of dying taking the vaccine than not. And certainly of dying from COVID. Kids were never dying from COVID. Kids under 18, the numbers from the very start were almost zero. And I'm sure if we went back and looked at the individuals that they claimed were children who died from COVID, you can bet your bottom dollar that there may not be a single one that died just from COVID. These kids that died had comorbidities. And the average individual that they were counting as dying from COVID had 2.6 comorbidities, meaning they were super obese, they had cancer, they had leukemia, they had whatever, way overweight, whatever. And these are the people that ended up dying from COVID. And then we go back and look at the regime that they put in place to protect you from COVID, put you on these machines that would basically, sounds like they might even kill you, the respirators. So just a nightmare of what happened to our country and around the world. This was pushed around the world. Then they pushed these vaccines. And I'm telling you, my theory is that I got hit hard by fact checkers in some articles I wrote at the Gateway Pundit when I said the vaccine or the COVID is not as bad as they're making it out to be. Very early on, WHO saying 3.4% mortality. I said, this isn't true. I've looked at their numbers and how they came up with it, and they're commingling numbers, and they're absolutely in error. The truth is that that COVID was about as deadly as the flu. It just affects elderly greater than the young. And that was the difference. And I was right, but I got hammered for that. I got doxed for that. And then 3-4 months later, I said, hey, these numbers for deaths don't make sense. Most people dying are dying with comorbidities, average 2.6, some of them with, 5, 6, 7 comorbidities. There's people on their deathbed, they catch COVID and they say, well, they died of COVID. And I think some of these hospitals were just registering deaths as COVID deaths because they got more money. So there was just this mess of reporting. And what we found out at that time is like only 6% of the people died from COVID only. And that was a big deal. Even Trump retweeted that. And I got hammered by like 10 fact checkers on that because they could not let us say that this COVID was not as bad as it was because they wanted to force us all into taking these vaccines that didn't work, that some people say may be very, very deadly in the long run. So comes out today, Cleveland Clinic, huge entity, shows that those people that didn't take the vaccine did the best. Those people that took more than three shots, basically, did the worst. And it went from there on down to those that just didn't take the shot. They're doing better. And I know people that, that work at that facility. It's an amazing facility. It's all over Florida. It's all over the country. So big news today on that. Just shocking, shocking news. So I'm going to change the tune here, but that was our bomb of the day. And thank you, Alex, for dropping that bomb, and I really appreciate it. Next, we're going to bring on our good friend Adam Ruckus again, who joined us yesterday. And again, thank him for his incredible insights yesterday. It was a great show. Adam today is going to share with us some information in regards to basically FBI Director Christopher Wray and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. So they've put some pressure on Wray to basically provide some information, and he hasn't done it. So I think today's the last day. So we'll see what Adam can bring us up to speed on. Adam, welcome to the Joe Hoff Show.
Thanks, Joe. That's right. I need a sound effect of my own, and my sound effect would be a ticking clock, like tick-tock, tick-tock, because time is running out for Christopher Wray and possibly Joe Biden, depending on how things go, right? Yes, you're correct. Today is the deadline, and I think Christopher Wray, the FBI director, has just been flat out ignoring this request, from what I understand. I think that he's been given multiple deadlines. I could be mistaken there. But regardless, if he doesn't make this deadline, that's it. He's going to be held in contempt, according to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Anyways, he declared that he would begin contempt charges against Wray if he does not hand over a potentially damning document involving the sitting resident in chief, Joe Biden. Tuesday, that's today, May 30th, marks the deadline for the FBI to turn over an internal document that Republicans claim shows President Biden was involved in a $5 million criminal scheme with a foreign national. I can't imagine why they would sit on this. The internal unclassified form is called FD-1023. That's the type of form it is. And apparently, allegedly, supposedly, probably details an arrangement, quote unquote, for an exchange of money for policy decisions. That is according to Republicans who issued a subpoena last month. McCarthy declared on Fox and Friends today, quote, if he misses the deadline today, I am prepared to move contempt charges in Congress against him. He added, quote, we have jurisdiction over the FBI, which they seem to act like we do not. I personally called Director Wray and told him he needs to send that document. Today is the deadline, end quote. Wow. Let's see. He says, quote, we have the right to look at it, Republicans and Democrats alike, on the House Oversight Committee. And if he does not follow through with the law, he will begin. We will begin contempt charges against Christopher Wray and the FBI. They are not above the law, end quote. Wow, I love to hear this. At the end of the day, though, I guess we shall see. I'm very curious. I tried to look into this. If he's held in contempt, obviously I know he needs to step down, but if he's criminally charged, who arrests the FBI director? Who's the guy that puts the handcuffs on somebody like him? Is it someone with the Secret Service or something?
No, it can't be done. It just can't. It's a joke. It's showing that our Constitution is fantastic, but there needs to be a few more checks and balances. And Ray has been, he's put his nose up to the law, you know, since he came in power. I've heard that Chris Christie is the one that told Trump to pick Christopher Ray. And he stabbed Trump in the back when he did that. Ray's been just absolutely horrible. He's a crook. He was working, he worked in the Enron deal back in the early 2000s with Mueller and Weissman. As a matter of fact, I think Weissman might have even reported to him. And Weissman's this DOJ attorney that's just, I had Joe DeGeneva on just a week ago. He said, nobody respects Weissman. He's such a crook. He uses lawfare and does an unbelievable things to get people to plead. Because he's just an animal. And Christopher Wray's just the same. He has ignored the Mueller exam. Trump would ask him, to check in. He just lies. So I know, the reason I say I don't think there's much they can do, Adam, is Eric Holder was held in contempt. He just said, okay, fine, no big deal. I'm moving on. What are you going to do about it? He was the attorney general under Obama. Nothing, And they did the same thing with Lois Lerner with the IRS. She was targeting conservatives, trying to prevent them from getting their nonprofit status. No, it happened. Nothing. Obama protect these people. You tell me, Adam, but it's like there is a flaw in that we don't have a justice system right now. Crooks are running it. And Ray is one of the king crooks. He is as dirty and nasty and disgusting, I think, as anybody in that role. And that says a lot, because we had James Comey and Robert Mueller before him and McCabe in there for just a brief stint as a acting director. These guys are so dirty. They're just disgusting. And that's why we're seeing this Justice Department. I think, you tell me, Adam, is this not the biggest issue right now with the corruption in our government, the fact that we don't have a justice department? What do you say?
Oh, this is scary stuff. This is straight out of like a fictional setting. This is a movie plot, a television series, a comic book, a noir novel. This is horrible. This is crazy. What can we do? This is not even a metaphor. This is the foxes guarding the hen house, right? Yeah. That's that kind of situation. Yeah. Who do you go to? You're in the town, and your sheriff is the land. He's the law of the land, and what he says goes. But if he's the one breaking the law, who do you go to? You're screwed. Yeah. I don't know how we fix this, Joe. Yeah. I really don't.
I think it comes down to this: you need to win the election. Everything comes down to that. That's why I preach and bark and everything. We've got to win the election, and we can and we will if it's fair. But right now, and we did last one if it was fair, but the stuff they did to steal that last election, they're going to do even more this election. And we saw Kerry Lake's election, and I think they figure once the counting's done and they're ahead, there's nothing you can do. And that seems to be the case, because the courts aren't stepping in. The courts are about as corrupt as the DOJ. I mean, these Obama judges are abysmal. So, I mean, we're in a real pickle here, Adam. This is really, it's, when people say, I've heard people say, we're in a communist state right now. I can't argue that. I mean, Christopher Wray is a monster. He is just disgusting. He doesn't care about justice. He doesn't care.
Yeah. And again, it's so in your face, it's so obvious that even the general layperson is going to eventually get it if they don't already now. And I think that that's the ultimate goal, because they ultimately want people pushed so far back against the wall with no escape. Mm-hmm. We're only human, Joe. We're going to fight back. They want us to fight back so that they can say, aha, see you dirty terrorists. You fought back when we were trying to stomp on your face. Now we can stomp on you some more. Yay.
Yeah. Throw us all in jail or kill us. That's exactly what's going on. It's these people are monsters. And this was, I say it goes back to Obama. He took the law, he took everything and twisted it. He made the terrorists the American people. And terrorists, he's bringing into the country free of charge. We're setting them up. As far as we know, we don't know who's coming in through that southern border. We don't know. It's just it's an absolute nightmare scenario. We've got to, you know, things are really real right now. I'm telling you, and this is a good example. So it's really hitting, I think, the exactly what we should be talking about. So great story, Adam. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah, you betcha, Senor. We'll chat again tomorrow, hopefully. God
willing.
Yeah,
thanks a lot.
Talk to you then.
Yep, God willing. Yep, and we'll be back in a moment with Larry Johnson.
TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
You get 5 points, Rob, for deciding to go with something new, try something new, break the mold, step out, you know, push your envelope, push your comfort zone. You get 5 points for that.
You get minus 100 points for being the most boring Spaces speaker in the history of Twitter Spaces. Okay, Elon is gonna, heads are gonna roll at Twitter, because Elon can't be too pleased with how the Twitter Spaces started, because it didn't. Okay, they kept crashing for like almost 8-10 minutes. It kept crashing, the whole app would crash. They'd speak for a little bit and then the whole thing would crash. Well, it's because people were logging on so rapidly. It was like 50,000 per minute. They had over 650,000 when they finally started. But Elon, dude, come on. You've been around the block before. How could your servers not have been prepared for 1 million? Okay. Pro tip. When President Trump does a space, set your servers to 3 million. Get your servers to be able to handle 3 million people.
The Timothy Shea Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
When you can point me to an industry, to a platform that reaches 250 million people a month, virtually 9 out of 10 Americans, that's real, that's substantive, that's important. And that reach and that touch point and that daily reinforcement, it's an amazing place to be able to communicate messages. That's massive.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
This is the Joe Hoff Show on TNT Radio.
Hey, we're back. This is Joe Hoff Show, and thank you for listening. Got a good friend and an expert on a lot of things joining me now, Mr. Larry Johnson. Larry, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Joseph. How are you, brother?
I'm great, man. I'm great. Hey, so much to talk about here. I hope you had a nice Memorial weekend.
Very relaxing.
Good. Yeah, me too. It was nice weather. It was fine. I sat down, actually watched a little TV, some shows that you can see over and over again, like on Netflix. Hadn't done that ever.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of fun. Yeah. They didn't have it, you know, 10 years ago when I was in Hong Kong, and then I get back and I just took some time to just kind of sit down with family and do that. And it was kind of nice. So relaxing. Yeah. So it's all good. So, hey, I heard a talk. I was anxious to ask you this. I heard over the, I guess I was listening to one of Steve Bannon's clips over the weekend where he had Jack Posobiec in, and Jack, I'm sure you know who Jack is, and he.
Right. Oh yes. Yes.
Yeah, he's been around some time. He built up some big Twitter accounts, and now he's with, I think, National Review or something. And I've met Jack, and he's a nice guy. He talked, though. His wife's Polish, and he's been over to Poland. As a matter of fact, he said during this interview that his wife's parents' place is only like 2 miles away from the Ukrainian border. So he knows exactly when they're what they're talking about in some of these cities. He knew a lot. It's really, my hat's off to him because I didn't know how bright he was or not. He sounded real competent when he talked about some of this stuff geographically, et cetera. He said in the Ukraine, for example, this big event that occurred, Bakhmut, he made some of these statements like, this is maybe the biggest battle in Europe since World War II. He said statistics are hard to find, but he was hearing, I guess the numbers he came up with were like 40,000 Ukrainians out of 80,000 troops dead, and 10,000 out of 50,000 Russian troops dead, and so 50,000 people dead in this battle. He said it's not far from like Stalingrad. So he says it's only a couple hundred miles from Stalingrad from World War II, right? Yeah. Did you know that?
Well, actually, it's quite a ways. It's probably over from there to Stalingrad's over another 200-300 miles.
But he was saying it's geographically, he was saying he said about 200 miles. So, but it's always been a significant area is what his point was. But just those numbers that he was saying and how, you know, just it was, it sounds like it was just horrible. So, what do you think?
I was going to say, what happened there is the Russians were engaged in a long siege of attrition. They were under no hurry to physically capture that territory. General Suravikin, the Russian commander, indicated early on that his goal was to try to chew up and destroy as much of the Ukrainian military as possible. And on the Ukrainian side, there was an argument actually between the military commanders and Zelensky, the civilian president. And Zelensky insisted upon holding Bakhmut. The Zaluzhny, the top general, he wanted, it was reported, to pull the troops out. So what happened is Ukraine continued to pour troops in, and in a complete reversal of conventional military doctrine. Conventional military doctrine says that a defending force can hold off a force three times its size, or the attacking force must be three times larger than the defending force. Well, that's not what happened here. In fact, the attacking force was a Wagner group was around 50,000. And yet the reports over the months are that Ukraine had over 120,000 troops in that town at one point. They almost had a 3-to-1 advantage over the Russians. Yet the Russians defeated them. The Wagner group defeated the Ukrainians, and they used a strategy, a combination of artillery and tanks that just decimated the Ukrainian forces. I think the casualty figures are up around 70 to 80,000 out of a possible 120,000. The Ukrainians themselves admitted 70% of their troops were either killed or wounded. So this was a devastating blow for Ukraine, and yet they're pretending that it was no big deal. So it's just, you know, it's part of the propaganda war, the information war that's out there. But the reality is what happened, which is Russia, with a smaller force, defeated the Ukrainian army that was completely, totally backed up and supported by NATO. In other words, it was a defeat for NATO as well.
Oh, yeah, big time. And I guess it goes back to what we've started from the start. Ukraine, you know, doesn't have any air support. They're just sitting ducks there, right? And I don't know how they can ever win with that situation. Who would even think they could? Well, what a horrible thing to put these people through.
Yeah, you've got to early on in the start of what the Russians call the special military operation and the Ukrainians call the Russian invasion. Russia took out a lot of the ground radar, which hampered air defense systems. And then they proceeded to eliminate Ukrainian air defense systems, which were basically legacy Soviet systems, the S-300, the Buk, the Buk, and were shooting down with great regularity the Ukrainian Air Force. So since about last September, since last May, the Ukrainians have been deprived of any kind of effective combat air, close air support. That means fixed-wing aircraft can fly in, drop bombs on opposing troops in order to provide some relief for the frontline troops. They've had no close air support at all going back to last May, as we saw that in Mariupol, the absence of that. Their ability to move people around with helicopters, very limited. So they're really left to do what they can do on the ground, driving around in armored vehicles or tanks. And even there, the number of those have been significantly destroyed by the Russians. So sure. You got Ukraine basically going around hat in hand every NATO member begging for tanks and vehicles and artillery pieces, and most importantly, ammunition, which they're short of as well.
It's just a, is it not a suicide mission?
Well, right now, yeah. In fact, we've been talking now for more than 2 months about an upcoming, the Ukraine's going to launch an offensive. Ukraine's going to launch an offensive. Here we come. We're going to attack. Watch out. We're coming. Well, I draw the parallel with World War II. Can you imagine what would have happened on D-Day if Eisenhower and Churchill and Roosevelt and Bernard Law Montgomery were all out saying, yep, Germans, we're coming. We're going to attack you in June. We're coming in June. Get ready. We're coming. What would have happened? The Germans would have been ready, and the Germans would have destroyed the invasion. And the Allies never would have taken over Western Europe. So you've got to step back and ask yourself, why is this? Do you have everybody from Victoria Nuland at the Department of State to Zelensky, to his commanders, to the Brits? Everybody's talking about the upcoming invasion. Well, Russia's not deaf, dumb, and blind, and they have a lot more people that speak English than we might imagine. So they take note of this. And what Russia has been doing now, it's going on almost 4 weeks. They have been launching every day massive aerial and missile strikes on key military targets throughout Ukraine, assembly points where the troops for this upcoming offensive are being assembled, vehicles, ammunition, warehouses stocked with explosives. It's all getting blown up. And just the last night or the day before yesterday, Russia hit the head of Ukrainian intelligence, their main headquarters in Kiev. So Russia's not sitting back. They have put together an astonishing bombing missile campaign over the last 4 weeks. And this comes after more than a year, every month, hearing, oh, yeah, Russia's running out of this. They're running out of missiles. They're running out of artillery. They're running out of tanks. It's all lies. Russia's not running out of any of it because they have a very robust industrial capability that is producing all the military materiel they need.
Would you agree with this statement? This is something else that was said the other day. They said basically Russia came in. They thought immediately, basically, that they just have a regime change, that the people there just say no more Zelensky and get him out of there. And they'd basically be able to work out some sort of agreement with some sort of party in Ukraine. And that would be it. They maybe with the assumption it would be much quicker. The thought was, when Zelensky started getting all this funding and all this artillery, I guess, military equipment, et cetera, from the U.S. and NATO, really it's from the U.S., it sounds like, then Russia decided to go back to move back some, and then slowly it's just going to grind its way forward. And that's what Bakhmut was. Would you agree with that type of analysis or no?
Well, to an extent. I mean, at the very outset, Russia made it very clear that their goal was to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine. They did not state at all, put a timeline or a deadline saying, okay, we have to have this done by September or by January or by end of the year, or by next year. They never had a timeline. I do agree that I think early on, they anticipated the possibility that the Ukrainians would have said, okay, now that the Russians have moved, we're going to cut a deal. And in fact, the reports are that in May of 2022, Ukraine and Russia had actually reached the outlines of an agreement for ending the war. And it was Boris Johnson and then Victoria Nuland and others that intervened with Ukraine, basically, I think, warning Zelensky that if you do this, you will not have any safe place in the West and will confiscate all your wealth. So Zelensky pulled out of that deal. The war continued. And then what happened in the August timeframe, the contracts for a number of the soldiers that had were engaged with that military operation came to an end. So that's why Putin ended up doing the the 300,000 man mobilization. And what the Russians did in that mobilization is take the time to train those units. They didn't just, but most of the people that were called up were reservists, so they had prior military experience. But instead of just, you know, putting a uniform on them and throwing them to the front, as the Ukrainians have been doing with their recruits, the Russians have put them through 3, 4, 5 month training courses. So you now have at least a 300, 350,000 man army on top of the troops that are on the front lines. So Russia right now, in terms of manpower that's deployed to the field, and is outnumbers Ukraine. But more importantly, the quality of those troops is far superior to anything Ukraine has, simply because they've had the luxury of being able to go through training. So many of the Ukrainians, you know, what we've seen in the case of a group that was trained in France last year, the French report that they've lost contact with those people. Sort of reminds me of that movie Aliens, where they said, we've lost contact with the colony on Mars. Well, that's because all the aliens had eaten them up. And in this case, the Russian military has basically eaten them up.
Wow. Brutal. Just brutal. So what's the next steps? What's gonna happen next?
Well, the United States seem hell-bent on escalating this. So they're talking about, well, we're going to get Joe Biden reverse course, has authorized the deployment of F-16s to the theater. That's really not going to do anything. I mean, number one, those planes are not likely to arrive until the end of the year. And I question whether there will even be a standing Ukrainian army by the end of the year. It'll be tough to sustain them. But assuming those planes arrive, it's something that the Russians will then shoot down. These are 45-year-old aircraft. It's not like it's brand new, modern, up-to-date. It's 45 years old, so it's old equipment. There's also reports that Biden is talking about authorizing an army missile called the ATACMS, which is a long-range missile. If that's introduced into theater, then I think you're really likely going to see Russia escalate as well. And what I mean by escalate is making sure that all the military and political headquarters in Kiev are destroyed, and then going after any missile bases or storage facilities in Poland or Romania. Russia's not playing around. They recognize that the West is committed to trying to destroy Russia, wanting to kill Putin, and they're living in a lawless way. And Russia recognizes that now, and I think is going to take every step it needs to protect itself. Hmm.
What's the have you heard or you read much on what's the mood of either the Ukrainians or the Russians?
Well, the Russians, Putin's popularity still hovers between 70% and 80%. Think about that. He is a very popular president. He has been very cool and relaxed in terms of there are the critics that exist within Russia want him to be more aggressive, want him to do more to destroy the West. He's still trying to leave some exit doors open, and then not close them all, but recognizes that they also have to be prepared to ultimately fight a war with NATO and the United States. What's going on with Ukraine is there's a great division between the military and the civilian leadership. It looks like the intelligence chief, a guy named Budenov, he's calling the shots basically on behalf of Zelensky. He's the one who was responsible. The Ukraine attempted to launch drone strikes on Moscow today, and it was a complete bust. They fell short, exploded in the field, because the Russian electronic warfare capability took out a significant number, and then their Pantsir air defense system shot the rest down. A couple got through, but without their explosive warhead intact, and basically it was like having a big bird fly into your window, broke some windows on and some apartments at the top of buildings. But, you know, again, they're hitting civilian targets. The Ukraine is not hitting any Russian military targets inside the country. In sharp contrast, that is all that Russia's hitting in Ukraine, Western Ukraine, outside of Kiev and outside of Lviv. So they've really dramatically stepped up their attacks on these sites because they're going to try to preempt the ability of the Ukrainians to launch this counteroffensive. I think though we live in a period of grave danger that this thing could escalate and get to the point where Russia may feel compelled to attack the continental United States.
Yeah, I just saw as you were talking, and you mentioned this, I guess, bombing in Russia, that this one article from one of these sites, conservative, what are they, conservative CF, I don't even know what they stand for. But they say Moscow came under attack from at least 8 drones early Tuesday morning, so early this morning. And the official said that the Russian capital is no longer entirely shielded from the war in Ukraine, that Russia's defense ministry accused Ukraine of carrying out the terrorist attack, but said all 8 drones were shot down or had their systems jammed. Some guy named Podolyak, top advisor Ukraine. Podolyak. Sounds like Ed Podolyak, the great. Remember Ed Podolyak, the great running back from Kansas City? Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing. Same name.
Podolyak. Okay. He was a great running back from Iowa, too. And right. Those great Kansas City teams years ago. Yeah. Anyways, Ukrainian President Zelensky claimed Ukraine was not directly involved, but was watching with pleasure. So.
Oh, brother. That's nonsense.
Yeah.
Ukraine was directly involved. Budenov, the head of their military intelligence, he's the one behind this. And there may be some that he's doing it without necessarily the tacit approval of the United States. In fact, he's probably doing it to hope in hopes of provoking a Russian reaction that'll make it more likely for the United States to get involved. But, you know, what is the United States going to do? We've already actually got U.S. troops on the ground in Serbia. And they're being attacked by the Serbs right now, and as part of this effort where the West is trying to, you know, basically launch a coup inside Serbia. It's crazy. You see, you can see the patches of the 101st Airborne. They're getting clubbed by some of the Serbian protesters.
Wow, that's amazing. Why would we even do that? It's just unbelievable. Hey, Larry,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back and follow up on this. If you don't mind sticking around, that'd be great.
Sure.
Okay. We'll be right back on the Joe Hoff Show.
Give Me a Minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I know it's early. The 2024 presidential election is still over 17 months away, but poll after poll shows that President Joe Biden is in deep trouble. The latest CNN poll says 66% of Americans view a Biden win in 2024 as either a disaster or a setback for the United States. And in the latest Fox News poll, 79% of Americans said Biden's policies are either hurting them or making no difference, while 83% say the economy is just fair or poor, which led Forbes media chairman Steve Forbes to make this prediction on Fox.
Next year, Joe Biden will not be the Democratic Party nominee.
Whoa. You're on record.
On record. Because the economy, yeah, they can sweep the Hunter stuff away, but that has a stench out there. So you have a poor economy, you have a president people feel is not up to the job anymore, certainly not for the next 4 years. So I don't know what the scenario is going to be, but they cannot have him running in November of 2024. Okay, well,
the more I see the numbers and watch Biden, the more I agree with Forbes and others who say the same. Can you say Gavin Newsom? Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Are you finding it harder to do the things you used to do, like vacuuming or getting to appointments? If you need a bit of support at home, the Australian Government's My Aged Care is your starting point to access services. You'll find all the information and advice you need in the one place. To find out about other services, eligibility and costs, call 1800 200 422 or go to myagedcare.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra, spoken by Heather Christie.
Joe Hoft on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, we're back, the Joe Hoft Show, with a good friend and expert in a lot of things, Larry Johnson. Larry, thanks for joining us again. We were just talking about Ukraine there, and I think I kind of stepped away there for a break. As we were talking about these drones that apparently, like you said, they didn't cause hardly no military damage. This is really bad what they did with those drones, because this reminds me of what we've seen in Israel over the years. Israel, when they did attacks on these terrorists, they would target specific spots. I mean, they weren't just shooting missiles into the public. Jim told me years ago he got an opportunity. A group liked what he was doing. And so he got an opportunity. They flew him to Israel and back. And he was there. There's a picture on the Gateway Pundit up top. If you ever noticed, it's him and Netanyahu and Andrew Breitbart. He's in that picture too. And so this group brought them over there, liked what they were reporting, and wanted to share with them basically what they were saying. This is our reality. And they said a couple things. But Jim, it was an interesting trip because he said how he got to drive, or they did a helicopter along maybe the border. And he said there's a fence there that they put up, and there's a highway right along the Western Bank or someplace like that. And people were getting shot at and killed as they were just driving to work, right? So they built this wall, and suddenly nobody's getting shot at or killed anymore because there's a wall. And then the international community was pressuring Israel to tear down that wall, how terrible it was for Israel to do that. And they're like, no, we're not going to do that because we're saving lives. But the other thing that Jim saw, they took him in a police station, and in the basement, they had all these shells, and they were shells that they'd collected over the past year or so at that time. And they were coming from like the other side of the wall and landing in this area. And they weren't targeting, police stations or military barracks or anything like that. These missiles, I guess what you might call them, or shells that were shot into Israel, they were just trying to hit anything, kill anybody. It was horrible because then the media would say that Israel's doing the terrible things to these terrorists, and these terrorists are such good people. And the reality was, no, these terrorists are trying to kill anybody. Israel's, when they fire, were at least targeting where they're, what they were trying to hit. And that was their argument. And now we see this thing today with the Ukraine, and they're basically playing the role of these terrorists, just throwing missiles anywhere, it sounds like, or drones in this case, hoping to hurt somebody.
Yeah, look, the reality is they've been doing this now for 9 years. When in the aftermath of the Maidan coup in February 2014, which overthrew the democratically elected government in Ukraine and replaced them
which
with
was pro-Russian.
Pro-Russian.
I think you're right.
They were they had more of affinity towards Russia because guess what? A significant portion of the population in Ukraine spoke Russian and had you know, they had family and other relationships. So it was not like it was just out of the blue, something that didn't make sense. But they overthrew that government and then declared that there would be could no longer speak Russian over in the Donbass. Well, the people, the Donbass militias rose up, and that was the start of a civil war. And there were significant numbers in the Ukrainian army at the time that defected from the army, went to fight on behalf of those militias. And well, and during that time period, the Ukrainian army was relentlessly launching artillery strikes and even firing tanks at civilian targets. They were not attacking military targets. They considered everybody who lived in the Donbass as a legitimate military target. So what they're doing now, trying to do to Moscow, is not new. The only difference is it's a very weak attack. It's very ineffective. And the Russians have very robust capabilities to defend against it. They shot down the majority of those drones. None of the drones hit and caused a massive explosion in terms of damage to property or didn't kill anybody. Some of the drones were brought down and exploded in the countryside, which, you know, it may have disturbed some earthworms and some June bugs. Other than that, they've been ineffective. Still, it represents the desire of Ukraine to try to escalate this. And Russia enjoys the ability, the capability to escalate beyond anything that Ukraine can do or, frankly, anything that NATO can do. But you've got to keep your eye out in about 2 weeks. The United States with the rest of the NATO countries are going to conduct a very large military exercise near the Baltic Sea up north. The last time NATO conducted this kind of exercise, according to Cy Hirsch, it was used as cover to plant explosives on the Nord Stream pipeline. So you can assume that it's very likely that this exercise may also be used as a cover or a front to carry out some other military operation. And the Russians, I'm sure from their standpoint, they're looking at this as just a Western pretext to launch an attack on Russia. So they'll be prepared to counter that. That's what I'm saying. This is the most dangerous time you or I have ever experienced in our lifetime. Since the end of World War II, we've never been in a more dangerous period than right now.
That's just huge. That's just huge. And you've got every right to say that, I think, too. I saw somebody else on another video over the weekend, and I can't – oh, he was talking to Glenn Greenwald, who's down in Brazil, that guy. And he said, well, these people are kind of ignoring the fact that we've got nuclear weapons here. And he goes, no, these things are very real, and they could very – you know, that very much so be used. And nobody's talking, you know, everybody just seems to be ignoring that. And this is so, you know, what you just said is, I mean, with nukes, you throw nukes in there, it's like this is scary.
But Russia has made every effort. I know that conventional wisdom in the West paint the Russians as the villain, but they're the ones who provoked this. But the reality is the United States has deployed the equivalent of an Aegis missile system that used to be on ships, but it's now land-based. It's in both Poland and Romania. Those Aegis systems have the capability to fire nuclear-tipped missiles. So they are as it's seemingly as close to Russia now as Cuba was to the United States during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Why in the world would we react as we did in 1961 when we felt a deliberate and direct threat from having those Soviet missiles, nuclear tip missiles at the time, within 90, 100 miles of our shore, when we're now doing the same thing to Russia, and that Russia will not react in the same way that we did? I mean, it's just crazy. So no, that's one of those.
Yeah.
Biden received a proposal from Putin in December 17th, specifically wanting to address that issue and to get that diffused. And Biden initially hinted, okay, well, maybe we could consider it. But then, you know, Vicky Nuland and Blinken and Jake Sullivan, they all intervened and said, that time to go screw off, which they did. So that's why Putin launched the special military operation. It's part of the reason, anyway, the 24th of February, because he recognized NATO is building up a potential nuclear capability on Russia's border that would limit Russia's ability to react to mere minutes. And they're not going to put up with that.
Wow. And I've heard the reasons for Russia invading. One was, you've mentioned a couple. They were killing Russians on the eastern side of Moscow, this Azov battalion and these Ukrainian troops. They had made some of these countries nearby part of NATO, and they did not want Ukraine to be part of NATO. They thought they're way too close. And I guess there was a couple other reasons. I can't remember right now, but you just nailed two of them. And they sound pretty reasonable. I've read there that we had promised Russia, I believe it was Russia. Maybe when Russia during the collapse, there was some sort of agreement or at least some sort of promise. No, we're not going to put nukes in these eastern satellite countries. And it sounds like maybe we didn't uphold that agreement.
Well, actually, it was James Baker, then Secretary of State to George H.W. Bush. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, Baker told Mikhail Gorbachev that, no, we give you our word, we will not expand NATO to the east. And then with the collapse of the Soviet Union, the breakup into the various republics and Russia emerging as its own, then under Bill Clinton reversed that started expanding NATO. And one of the reasons they expanded NATO is not because Russia was posing a greater military threat. They were expanding NATO because we didn't have enough troop strength on our own to fill out what we thought was the required size of NATO. So it was by bringing in new countries, you would, quote, acquire new troops, new resources. It was just sort of an economic motive driving it. But then in the course of 2008, Putin made it very clear that any further attempt to bring in Ukraine or Georgia would be a red line as far as Russia was concerned. The West did make an attempt to do something in Georgia, which led to a 2-week war in Georgia, which Russia crushed the Georgians. That was back in 2008. The Georgians initially attacked a Russian position, not vice versa. So
that was during Bush. Is that right?
Yeah, that was during George
2008.
George W. Bush, yeah. August 2008, just a few months before the presidential election. So, and then what we saw under Obama, it got even worse. Obama put, number one, he put Joe Biden in charge of the Ukraine portfolio so Biden could go out and load up his family with all sorts of crooked deals.
And
favors.
Everybody else. Lindsey Graham as well, and others.
Yeah. So what we're looking at is we've got now 20 years of a U.S. government policy that's involved both Republicans and Democrats, but principally Democrats over the last 14 years, that is focused upon trying to change foreign governments so that we will put people in power that will do the things that we want, we the United States want them to do, principally such as putting our people on boards of their companies and giving the United States control over a lot of their economic resources. We've seen that over and over and over again. And Ukraine is just the latest and most egregious example of it.
It just sounds like the U.S. has made itself into what we're complaining about China doing with Taiwan.
Well, yeah, but with one big difference. I mean, as you know, going back to 1972, the United States agreed with China's position that Taiwan was part of China. So the United States made that agreement. Now, the Taiwanese may not necessarily believe that, but I think actually what you're going to see in the next several months is I don't think China is going to need to conduct a military operation to take control of Taiwan. I think it's going to be done through the ballot box.
Yeah.
The Kuomintang, Kuomintang will take over.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Hey, Larry, thanks for your great analysis. Kind of scary times. We need to pray a lot right now, that's for sure. Appreciate you coming on. Really appreciate it. You take care.
We'll catch up
again soon.
All righty.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back tomorrow on The Joe Hoff Show.